Yesterday, my right honourable friend, the Chancellor, set out the final coalition budget of this Parliament. The policy measures contained in the budget document were all agreed between us. I secured key Liberal Democrat commitments, including the significant increase in the income tax personal allowance, support for mental health, tax measures to support motorists, Scotch whisky and the oil and gas sector, because together they make our society fairer and our economy stronger. Yet I know that millions of people watching yesterday's exchanges between the Chancellor and the Leader of the Opposition were left wondering, isn't there another way to do this? Because, of course, people want a stronger economy based on a credible plan. But people also want a fairer society based on modern public services. So to all those people left cold by yesterday's exchanges, to all those asking themselves, is there another way? Today I say, yes, there is. There is a better way. Today I set out a better economic plan for Britain. A plan that is based on values of fairness as well as strength, Mr. Speaker. A plan that delivers on our commitment to balance the books in a fair way. A plan that borrows less than Labour, cuts less than the Conservatives, and enables our country to see light at the end of the tunnel, not a roller coaster ride, Mr. Speaker, but a steady path back to prosperity. This sticks to the path that we have chosen in this government, not lurching away from it by cutting too much or borrowing too much. The fiscal forecast published by the Chancellor yesterday would, according to the Office for Budget Responsibility, return government consumption, the effective spending power of the state, back to the level last seen in 1964. But the era of Cathy Come Home is not my vision for the future of Britain. Though I can see, Mr. Speaker, why 1964 might appeal to some on this side of the House. After all, it's before Nigel Farage was born. The economic plan that I'm publishing today, Mr. Speaker, has been produced by the Treasury based on assumptions that I provided using data from the Office for Budget Responsibility. The economic plan I'm publishing today, a Treasury document, has been produced by the Treasury based on assumptions I provided using data from the Office for Budget Responsibility. To finish the job we started in 2010 requires roughly £30 billion of fiscal consolidation by the year 2017-18. All parties in this House signed up to that in January, though the Shadow Chancellor has been trying to wriggle out of that commitment ever since. Our first priority must be to ensure that those with the broadest shoulders bear the largest share. So the fiscal plans I'm setting out today are based on a further £6 billion from tax dodgers, an additional £6 billion of tax rises. Those in high-value properties, the banking sector and others, should pay more, rather than asking those working on low incomes to accept less. This would leave around £12 billion of departmental expenditure savings and the remaining £3.5 billion from welfare savings. Those measures allow the structural current deficit to be eliminated in 2017-18. In fact, Mr. Speaker, the Coalition's fiscal mandate is met with headroom of £7.7 billion. Once that task is complete, we need to continue to cut the debt as a share of the economy, and we will not flinch from that task. To do otherwise would be to leave an intolerable burden to future generations. But provided we can meet that target, borrowing for productive investments in infrastructure, in roads, railways, broadband and housing, can and should be part of our plan. So we will grow public expenditure as the economy grows after 2017. 10 years on from the financial crisis is the right time for the public finances to turn the corner. Continuing the pain beyond that date is unnecessary. It is simply cuts for cut's sake. To go too slowly, as the opposition recommends, would drag out the pain for too long. The national debt as a share of the economy would fall in every year of this plan from 78.2% in 2017-18 to 76.1% and then 73.9%. The implied spending envelope for departments would be £314.3 billion in 2017-18, Mr. Speaker, rising to £324 billion and then £348.1 billion in the last year. That is £25 billion, then £36 billion and then £40 billion more money available for public services and infrastructure investment than in the plans presented yesterday. Just think what you could achieve with that, Mr. Speaker. They may not like to hear it on the benches opposite, Mr. Speaker, but it's money that, for instance, could be used to ensure, for example, that the NHS has the £8 billion it needs to secure its future, to ensure that the education budget can be protected, in real terms, from cradle to college, not allowed to wither, to support growth-enhancing spending of the sort delivered so effectively, Mr. Speaker, by my right honourable friend, the Secretary of State for Business, or to reward the her hard work
and must resume servant, his seat. Order, he must resume his seat. Order. Sir Bob, I don't think I require a lecture from you upon the matter of good order. Calm yourself, man. It will be better for your health. Chief Secretary.
Mr. Speaker, they may not like it, but I'm setting out the numbers in the Treasury document published today, Mr. Speaker, which is an entirely legitimate thing to do. This would also allow us, Mr. Speaker, to reward the hard-working public servants whose pay restraint has helped so much to balance the books. Public servants have made big sacrifices. We need to repay that. Mr. Speaker, no Chief Secretary has ever had to control public spending in the way that I have, and no Chief Secretary should ever have to do so again. But this scenario proves that there is simply no need to shrink the state in the way that some in this House propose. The recovery secured, the fiscal mandate met, national debt down, the public finances turned the corner, a stronger economy and a fairer society, a better future for the United Kingdom. That is what these plans deliver. But fairness, Mr. Speaker, is not simply embodied by the numbers on a spreadsheet. It's also about the actions that we take. Nothing makes people more angry than the sight of people refusing to pay the tax that they owe. Last month, I committed to ensure that any individual or company who facilitate tax evasion would face stronger criminal penalties and financial sanctions. Today, we deliver on that commitment by publishing a substantial package of next steps in the clampdown on these immoral and illegal practices. We inherited... If the Honourable Gentleman would simply listen to what was being said instead of ranting like a lunatic, he would hear the measures that the government is taking to clamp down on tax evasion, Mr. Speaker. Because today we deliver on that commitment by publishing a substantial package of next steps in the clampdown on these immoral and illegal practices. We inherited from the previous government a tax system with more holes than a Swiss cheese and more complex than a Rubik's Cube. The opportunities for those who wish to get away without paying were many and varied. For too long,
the Honourable Gentleman, the Member for Denton and Reddish, shouldn't keep shrieking from a sedentary position, which page? If the Right Honourable Gentleman wishes to go through page numbers, that is his prerogative. But if he doesn't, I think excessive gesticulation is rather unseemly. Now, I have high aspirations for the Honourable Gentleman's future as a statesman, but I'm not sure he's aiding his objective of becoming a statesman by this rather shrill shrieking, which in any case, as I'm sure Mrs. Gwynne will confirm, will be injurious to his health. The Chief Secretary.
And, Mr. Speaker, we wouldn't want to injure his health nor to allow him to, not to hear the changes that we're making to deal with tax evasion, Mr. Speaker. For too long, our tax system struggled with the fact that a small minority felt it perfectly okay to indulge in tax avoidance and commit the crime of tax evasion. The public will not tolerate being stolen from anymore. When this coalition government came into office, we made it clear that we would eradicate loopholes which the previous administration had left wide open, and that if you have not been compliant, we'll give you the chance to put your affairs in order, but then we will come after you. Since 2010, in every year of this Parliament, we've put in place measure after measure to tackle the abuse of the tax system, and HMRC will have secured £100 billion in additional revenue over the course of this Parliament. This includes more than £31 billion from big businesses and an extra £1.2 billion from the UK's 6,000 richest people. Yesterday's budget announced further measures targeting those who persistently enter into or market tax avoidance schemes that HMRC defeat. The budget also announced game-changing information exchange agreements with over 90 tax authorities worldwide. Today, I can announce the next steps, Mr. Speaker. A tough, comprehensive new evasion-deterring package. First, for offshore evaders. Following consultation, we will introduce a new strict liability criminal offence so you can no longer simply plead ignorance in an attempt to avoid criminal prosecution. Strict liability will bring an end to the defence of "I knew nothing, it was my accountant, my lord." Second, the government will introduce a new offence of corporate failure to prevent tax evasion or the facilitation of tax evasion. No longer should any organisation be able to get away with facilitating or abetting others to evade tax. If people help a burglar, they are accomplices and criminals too. Now it will be the same for companies who fail to prevent their employees helping tax evaders. They will be treated as accomplices too. Third, we will increase financial penalties for offshore evaders, including for the first time linking the penalty to underlying assets. A billionaire evading £5 million of tax won't just be liable for that £5 million. Fourth, we will introduce new civil penalties so that those who help evaders will have to pay fines that match the size of the tax dodge they facilitate. So if you help someone evade £1 million of tax, you risk a penalty of £1 million or even more yourself. And fifth, we will extend the scope for HMRC to name and shame both evaders and those who enable evasion. Our message is simple. Come forward and settle your affairs or be caught and face the consequences. These measures, Mr. Speaker, are helping to put in place a far more effective tax system in the UK. Once again, it combines fiscal responsibility with fairness. Mr. Speaker, there's one last measure I'd like to mention. Mr. Speaker, yourself and the Right Honourable Member for Salford and Eccles have pioneered measures to open up politics and Parliament to people from a more diverse range of backgrounds. And following extensive discussions, I'm delighted to confirm that the Treasury has agreed to provide reserve funding, £200,000 a year, for the Speaker's Parliamentary Placement Scheme in both 2015-16 and 2016-17 to ensure its excellent work can continue beyond this year. And I pay tribute to the work done by you, sir, and by the Right Honourable Member for Salford and Eccles as the driving forces behind this programme. Combining fiscal responsibility with fairness, that is the approach that we as Liberal Democrats have brought to the Coalition Government. We will finish the job of dealing with the deficit and do so fairly. We will get the national debt down. We will secure the economic recovery, and we'll have no tolerance for people who evade tax or those who help them. And that is the approach which will deliver a stronger economy and a fairer society. And I commend this statement to the House. Yeah.